Spurs, grab your passport because we're heading to Italy as we dissect Call Me By Your Name. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have Armie Hammer and Timothée Chalamet in this romance story that takes place in good old Italy, based on a novel of the same name. That's what we're talking about. Yes. And we have Marissa Serafini here to talk about it with me.
Hello, everyone.
And I am Phil Svitek. Missing in action from this anatomy is Dimitri Panos. Fear not, he will be back.
Yes.
He forgot his passport. couple of administrative things before we get into things. Number one, welcome! Of course, welcome. If you're rejoining us, welcome back. If you haven't yet subscribed, please do so. That way, you just get all the episodes automatically. You don't have to search for anything. You're kept up to date. And furthermore, a lot of you guys ask us how you guys can help us. We do this for free to you guys, and we do it with much love as we can give. And the number one thing you guys can do is just spread the word that we're doing this to your fellow cinephile friends and, you know, let them make their own decision. If they like us, if they don't like us, that's up to them. But let them know we're out here. Secondly, if you want to follow along with our rundown, feel free in the description box. There's a PDF. Just click it and you're able to see everything. And lastly, we assume that you've seen the movie. Therefore, it is spoiler-filled. So if you haven't seen the movie, you've been warned, but we recommend that you see the movie first before listening to us.
Yes, agreed. And if you haven't read the book, highly suggest you read the book as well, which I do have the Call Me By Your Name book, right?
So tweet at Serafini TV if you want to borrow her copy.
Yes. It's a great read, and it's a very interesting story, and definitely how they adapted it from the book to the film. I have to start off the show by saying I enjoyed the book more than I did the film.
That generally tends to be the case.
Generally, yes. But I loved the book more than I did the film.
But did you love or appreciate the movie?
I appreciate the movie. I definitely think the movie did a great job of like having the nuances of coming of age and the first love, just everyone... And like that understanding of how one would feel, whether it be a man or a female, like towards any gender, like that first love and like what do you do in certain circumstances and situations? How do you handle things? How emotion plays with your actions and stuff. And I think they did a good job of showing it in this film.
Yeah, I think this movie, if it was a lot shorter, let's say by literally 30 minutes, I would have enjoyed a lot more because it would have compressed those emotions and I would have seen a better through line. I think things were just too elongated at times. And I don't want to disrespect the movie, but it felt at points like I was just watching a home movie where they just placed the camera and let me watch. And now part of that was conscious from a cinematography standpoint. They literally used the same lens throughout the movie. And I could tell they never went close with anything. It was quite far away. I mean, sometimes they moved the camera physically closer, but we never got too close.
Right. It was a lot of static shots and with no movement whatsoever. It's just placement, watch them. And what we're watching in the film is like watching Elio's life, his day-to-day life in the summer. Not gonna lie, it's actually pretty boring. He doesn't really do much other than write, compose music, and sit next to a pool, and every once in a while have his occasional bike rides. That makes for a fairly boring summer. Fine, simple, very simple. Do we want to?
It's a productive summer.
Yeah,
but
sure. Do we want to keep watching that every single day for 3 months? No, because that gets old real quick. But that's the thing. This film definitely shows them literally go from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen in real time. And it takes up our time watching it. And this is where editing does actually become effective in his storytelling. It's like, we understand what he's doing. Do we need to see everything he's doing? No.
Let me get at this movie. I'll cut it down to size.
Yes. It really affected the pacing and the feel of this film because it felt like the longest summer ever watching this film.
And not in a good way.
No.
And that was the irony. They really wanted this movie to show the emotion side of it. And I think just because it was so long, I think certain things were lost. Let me ask you this. As far as the plot, I know there's various differences, but from a general plot perspective of what the book is to what the movie is, are they at least spiritually aligned?
Yes. Yes, there's the same setup where you have the family friend that comes over. There's likeness and attraction towards each other. They spent most of the summer avoiding each other because they don't really know how they feel towards each other. And then it's near the end of the summer where they start to actually, you know, go on and like act on their emotions. And that's where the relationship part comes in. It doesn't come until later into the story. But then where the film ends, there's actually more in the book than where the film ends. The film just ends after they separate when they go into Italy, when they go on their personal trip together, and then Oliver leaves. And then we pick up a scene afterwards where we can assume a few years have passed, and now Oliver's getting married, and essentially, that's where it ends, and Elio's, like, heartbroken. But in the book, there's actually more moments where Oliver keeps coming back to the family. Years later, years have passed, so there's, like, a five-year break. Oliver comes back. Then there's a 10-year break. Oliver comes back. Then a 15-year break. Oliver comes back. There are more moments after where the film ends, where the book picks up. And they didn't have that.
You know what? Thankfully, in my mind.
Yeah, thankfully.
I didn't need more years tacked onto this movie. But so that's good to know. Here's why I asked that question, because one of the things that, and I know I'm kind of skipping ahead and we'll backtrack, I promise. But one of the things that appealed to the director for this movie was that it was a coming of age story unlike any other. Because it wasn't a love triangle. There wasn't necessarily an outside force that spurred anything. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, well, no, duh. And that's what makes it somewhat boring, is that we're literally just watching two guys court each other. And it's fine. It's good. But where's the tension?
Right, and also there really was, you can assume that there could have been a love triangle when you had a love square, when you had Oliver's girlfriend that he was sleeping around with or fooling around with every once in a while, and then you had Elio's girlfriend that he was fooling around with. So there was like four people in and out, but you can definitely tell that those guys didn't love those other women. So there wasn't conflict there because you knew the whole story was their attraction to each other. And in the book is mainly all internal dialogue. It's all Elio's thought train. But it's told beautifully in a narrative sense, but it's from his perspective and from like a memory type of looking back on what happened in his life and how this attraction became to be. And it's really like a memoir type of narrative storytelling, where in the film you don't get that. It's really, as a present day, you're just watching it as it is.
Well, the interesting part, they did have narration. They chose not to go with narration. Through my research, I wasn't able to find the exact moment that they made that decision. So I'd be interested to know if there was any point at which they had a cut of the movie that had narration, and then they just decided to take it out. Because in a sense, all those moments that we're talking about that are elongated of them walking from one side of the screen to the next could have quite well had narration, and maybe that worked. Mm-hmm. But when you take out the narration, now there's just a whole void unfilled.
And you're just watching something happen. And we've talked about it in other films and anatomies where voiceover can be done properly. And this could have been a film where voiceover could have easily worked and helped the story and the narration along with it. But there were some shots where it just stood on the characters for way too long. There was a moment where Oliver's dancing there, and it's like slow motion dancing. Like he's literally in slow mo, just like having the life of the party on the dance floor. And Elio is just watching him. But the audience is watching Oliver just gyrate for a full 2 minutes. I'm like, okay, I get it. He's dancing. But like even that, there was a quick one line in the book where, yeah, they had fun, danced one night. But that was it. That's like as fast as it went. That should have been as fast as it went in the film. That could have been a moment where it really reflected the internal dialogue of Elio that was also in the book.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, when you adapt the book, it's obviously not going to be the same. I mean, we'll talk about the differences, and some are more major, some are more minor, such as instead of, like, they were supposed to go to Rome in the book, they don't end up going in Rome. They, you know, that would have been a lot more costly for production, so they go elsewhere. But where I'm getting at is I'm fine with those liberties. Take them because you're adapting something for a different medium, by all means. I would have liked to see a little bit more conflict from the women love interests, if you want to call them that. Because they, you know, both were being, I don't know, you could say courted or otherwise. And so that sort of conflict of, okay, we're make-believing in this realm, but we truly, there's an honesty to us that we like each other, and how do we handle that side of it? And that might be an Americanized version of it. There's literally articles out there calling this the straightest gay movie ever, because in particular because of how the dad reacts. And I don't have a problem with that. We'll certainly talk about that a little bit more in length, but I just needed conflict from somewhere.
Yeah, and that's interesting you brought that up, where you would expect more conflict with the women. And because, I mean, if you want to make comparisons, like Brokeback Mountain, there was conflict with the women and the guys who, in that storyline too. But reading it in the book, just like the film, I will give the film that, just like the book and the film, the women in these guys' life do end up just like disappearing. They're kind of written out because there's moments where they write when they're together, but you can obviously tell that they were thinking, like Oliver and Elio were thinking of each other when they were with the woman. So the women just kind of literally phase out, and you don't think about them when you're reading or watching them together on the screen. So I think it was just because they didn't build the women characters to be interesting, because you're more interested in Elio and Oliver.
And I think for the book, again, I haven't read it. You have. So in that sense, I can't speak to it 100%, but it would seem to me, like, from a book perspective, I don't think I would have minded it that much, because it's, you know, I'm trying to watch something visual. It's just I had a problem with the slice of life. And I would have taken a slice of life. It was just a little bit too long. But I'm sorry if I don't mean to, like, crap all over this movie. I think there's elements that do work. I think there's a lot of great production stuff that I definitely want to talk about, when we will. But, you know, as we're dissecting the story first, that's my issues with it.
It is a simple story. That's the thing. Because this book, it's so internal dialogue, and just how Elio is living his life from day to day and how he's thinking about things and his inner, it goes so beautifully in depth of his inner desire towards Oliver and his internal conflict that's like, is Oliver thinking of me? What do I think of myself thinking this way about Oliver? Like you can read his whole conflicting mental thought train as one would when going into his first love, his first homosexual act. And it's like you're following this thought train. It's actually very beautifully written, but that does not translate as well on screen, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's not to say, like, you know, we'll talk about the acting. What they were able to bring to the role truly was amazing. You know, I think they captured both the characters really well, and they made it. They did make it believable. So it's not to say that there was any bad acting. it's just no different than if I saw a home video of some other person that I didn't know about. I'm sure it has a lot of meaning for them, mm-hmm. honestly, for me. Let's, before we move on to the more technical side of things, what sort of message do you ultimately walk away with? Because we get that scene, and it's a, from what I've read, it's a small portion of what the ultimate dialogue is between the father and the son, which I thought was still very powerful in the movie. And then we get that scene, we end it there with essentially heartbreak.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was very conflicted as to what the message of the movie was, because it ended on such a down note. I was like, oh, damn.
It is a downer of a film, the way it ended. I appreciated the father scene because the conversation with the father at the end, it's almost word for word that it is in the book. This is one of the moments where they were actually, like, true to the original source. I appreciate it because in such a day and age where homosexuality is more acceptable, and you take this back in the 70s of the story that, like, it was originally supposed to be, it is taboo. And but if you bring it to today's age and it's more acceptable and the parents are accepting and even the father, coming from a father accepting homosexuality and like who his son really is, it speaks volumes for just anyone, from like a parent to a child or just a parent to anyone in general. I think it was such a moving message because in the entire book, Elliot is completely conflicted with his feelings, and he keeps telling himself he knows it's wrong. He knows it's wrong. But when his father tells him it's okay at the end, like, it wraps up the entire story, like, okay, he's not wrong. You know, it kind of has a beautiful message at the end that, like, your internal thoughts are sometimes wrong. But that didn't really translate as well on screen. It was beautiful to watch on screen to see a father, but it didn't hit as hard as it did in the book.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, for me, not that it was sadistic, but in a way, the way Elio is just sitting there and just credits her rolling as a final scene, and that's just, you're just watching this guy literally in tears while life is happening in the back of him. And he knows he can't turn around because he doesn't want people to know or see. I was just floored from, wow.
Yeah, how he really felt towards Oliver. But also, in the book, had they kept going the 5, 10, 15 years afterwards, there are moments when Oliver keeps coming back and you can tell that they still clearly love each other. Although Oliver now has a family, he's married, he has a wife, he has two beautiful children, and like near the end of the book, Oliver's kids are near the age of what Elio was when Oliver and Elio first hooked up. So it's just like so many years have passed where it reflects on just who they are now as people. They're older, they're more wiser, and they're closer to the age of, or like the son, the kids are closer to the age of what they were when they were younger, when they first started loving each other, but they're still in love. And that's what makes the ending of the story heartbreaking, because Oliver and Elio are still like, call me by your name.
Mm-hmm.
Because they still clearly love each other. And in the movie, it just cuts off. It'd be like, okay, he's now getting married.
Well, you know, the hard part
that is sad.
From the movie perspective, what I thought they were going for early on was Armie Hammer and his character Oliver does such a wonderful job of inserting life into a well thoughtful kid and kid with a bright future, but just it invigorates life into him. That's why, you know, I think the dancing scene is so elongated and so forth, is because that's where it seems like we're headed. And I thought the moral of the story was going to be, okay, we all have a first love, we lose out on that first love, but hey, look at everything I've learned and gained. And I don't know if I'm left with that sense by the end of the movie. Like, that's the direction things are pointing to. But him just in complete tears is not reminiscent of, okay, yeah, I lost and I'm unhappy, but I gained something.
Mm-hmm. Right. Had they kept showing the continuation after they first split up, it's more heartbreaking to know that Oliver is still very much in love with Elio, even though Oliver started his own family and had his own kids and started a completely different new life without Elio. That's more heartbreaking, knowing that someone else moved on.
Mm-hmm. 100%. All right, so let's talk about more of the production side of things. First off, development nightmare. Or I don't know if, you know, maybe you call it that, maybe you won't. But it's been wanting to come to existence since 2007, when they first bought the rights and this movie came out, or this book came out. So, in essence, so 10 years, pretty much to the day.
Yeah, that took a while. And we've talked about movies where it's gone through the hands of different directors, and that's also what I was thinking while watching this film. It is one long, simple film. You don't know where creative differences could have come into play because it is such a simple story. So it's confusing of like where people might have had creative conflicts.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the conflicts in general, not necessarily creative, but putting together a movie in Italy is very costly. I don't know firsthand. I've never tried to shoot in Italy, nor have I been to Italy that many times to begin with. But that was their first hurdle. They were just always set out looking for a location. Now, as a tangent to that, I thought what they got was a wonderful location. I rather enjoyed that. They originally wanted to purchase it as a house. They couldn't afford it, but you know, they spent 6 weeks just decorating it out before they started shooting, and made it feel like all these people truly live there.
Yeah, I mean, that, and like the house location that they picked was gorgeous, and you can definitely tell, and that goes with the story as well, that this is a family summer house that they all went and lived at and spent months at a time. And it looked gorgeous. It looked a beautiful, big, you know, type of villa. It definitely got the feel of they are wealthy. You can tell they live a luxurious, somewhat luxurious type of life, but they also enjoy life at the same time. So,
absolutely,
and it's pretty.
is you know, one of the things I appreciated. Everyone was so tight knit that Luca, the director, he would screen movies for the cast and crew, and he would make you know, food and such forth. So they really bonded over production. And in fact, in particular, Armie and Timotei. Juliet, that's how you say his name, right? Juliet from the booth. Look at that. Get my French on. They in particular bonded, and it reflected in the movie. And in fact, very rarely does it happen, but they shot the movie pretty much chronologically.
Oh, yeah. I can believe that, too, because it is such a... And I think that helps with the performance and authenticity of a building, budding relationship, too. And I think that worked well. You can tell that they were not... I don't want to say cold, but they were timid towards each other. They were kind of apprehensive at moments. But throughout the film, you do see those moments of progression where they're starting to like open up to each other and then start to get more intimate with each other in the conversations and all that.
Yeah, and it's kind of really incredible. They had Armie Hammer in mind after The Social Network. They just absolutely fell in love with him. And, you know, in a sense, you could say that these movies came out a lot later, but you knew he was going to be able to pull it off because he's played homosexual characters before, twice before. But never has either one of them been as intimate, quote unquote, as this time around, in terms of, you know, just having to go for it.
Yeah, and like, and I appreciate that they, you know, went to certain lengths as actors, because the moments when they finally did start kissing and like, and then ultimately having sex and stuff, that's what also happens in the book too. There are moments where they had to build up to each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, also touching upon, speaking of sexuality, one of the major scenes that people are talking about is the pitted peach scene. Mm-hmm. And according to Taoism, a peach represents virginity and so forth. And they sort of knew that it was a metaphor for sexual impulses and energy, but that in essence it would be too explicit. Well, Timotei and Luca, they were very nervous about the scene. They had their reservations, and each of them, this is what it is, quote, so I'm not, each of them tested the method themselves and then agreed that it worked. Now, I don't know what that means. Take it for what it's, whatever you want to interpret it as, but I just found that quite interesting.
Okay. I mean, it was interesting to watch on screen, not going to lie, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it. But it's also, it's in the book, so like I did like that they did keep true to the scene, because this reading about it is way more graphic than what we actually saw on screen.
I bet. Like, you're getting first-hand account.
On screen is, let me tell you, it's very dialed down than what it is in the book. And Ellie was just thought-trained when he's... You know, masturbating towards this peach. He's thinking of Oliver, but he's thinking of like all these things of like he's imagining it's Oliver, and just you can take it from there and what you will. But it's way more graphic, but it's done not in like a gratuitous way, but it's just this is how Elio is thinking. He at this moment in the book, he's still very conflicted with his emotions, and he's torn. Because you see the moment when Oliver actually goes to him after he just done it, and he starts crying because he is so torn with his emotions and conflicted, and he still thinks that this, like, loving another man is wrong.
Yeah. And in fact, one of our fans asked in the chat, so if you're ever watching live, you can always chat with us. If you're not live, just comment. That's fine. Why would Oliver marry a woman that's just mean to the woman? Well, mm-hmm. I don't disagree. However, I also think one of my issues with this movie is they didn't play with that idea that as a gay person, you're not at that time, you're not really accepted, and there's, you know, you have to fit this social norm. The amount of stories that or TV shows or movies that we've sort of talked about where, you know, the wife is married to a gay person and she finds out. Right. You know, we've done it lots of times, so this is no different.
I mean, that's a fair question to ask, but also in the movie, you don't ever see the wife. She's not a key player. In the book, you only see her maybe once, and that was when Oliver and his now family is visiting Elio's family. She's also not a key player. She's not important. The more important thing is, I think the bigger question is, why would Oliver be married, start family when he's still in love with Elio? That's the bigger question. And I think it's just Oliver's perspective is that, yeah, he there's a side to him that he loves Elio. They're like, he has a place in his heart. But he's also, in a way, he's bi. He does love this woman as well, has a family. But there's a secret side to Oliver that he can't reveal to his family, that he's in love with a man as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not towards, and that's not being cruel to the woman. The family is just the minor blip in the story. You don't even see the family in the movie. You hardly see the family in the book either.
Well, that is interesting you say it like that, because I would have liked to see elements of that in the movie. You know, I think there's a lot of things, we're getting a very surface view of who these people are, mm-hmm. And I would like to dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah, it would have been great to see it in the movie, because when we have Elio's breakdown and the credits starts rolling, that would be way more earned and way more understandable why it's so heartbreaking at the end, knowing that Oliver has now a family, yeah, and a new life without Elio.
Yeah, for sure. As far as Mr. Perlman, right? I know we talked about the scene from a story standpoint, but from a production standpoint, he didn't start reading the book until he joined production. And he just spent so many months to prepare that scene, and he wanted to make it as simple as possible. And in fact, from a production standpoint, they want to do as little setups as possible and let them just do the scene.
I think that's great. And Michael Stahlberg, I mean, he's a great actor. He's been in three of the most recent films that we've talked about here on Anatomy. So it's great that he's, you know, having a really good solid year in movies. I think he's great. I think he played such a believable, lovable dad, especially in the moment where Elliot needed a male figure in his life. Because right now, the only guy that Elliot was paying attention to is Oliver. He loses Oliver. He really doesn't have another man just to look forward to or confide in. And ultimately enough, he gets it from his father, who gives him the most supportive word ever. So I think it was such... That was an amazing moment. One of my favorite moments in the film.
Yeah, there's I don't know, controversy is the right word, but there's a lot of pushback, let's say, against that scene because from American critics, at least, they're saying that it's too easy, if you will. And it's like, okay, well, not every parent has to storm off being like, I can't believe my kid's gay. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that we're in that mindset and we have to argue against it, it's like, no, this could very well be an honest reaction to something like this. And just because it doesn't mesh with your preconceived notions, F off, you know?
Right.
So I don't have, as far as anything goes, as any problems that I've laid out, I certainly don't have a problem with this.
No. And even just the character of Elio, he hid, quote unquote, his relationship with Oliver from his parents, from his friends, from everybody. But I love it when the parent came back, like, I know what you two were doing. It's okay, you know, and like, we're not going to judge you. We're still going to love you. It's like any kid would want acceptance from their parents, no matter what kind of relationship you're in.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this movie kind of completes the trilogy of the director's, what he calls, thematic desire trilogy, starting with I Am Love in 2009 and Bigger Splash. Have you seen any of those?
I have not.
I have not actually either. So, and it's, the trilogy's purely thematic. It's not like these actually intertwine in any sense. But he liked it because this in particular was non-aggressive and simple approach, the most calm movie he has in particular made about desire. And it is very much about desire, isn't it?
Yeah, this whole book, this internal desire of Elio towards Oliver, every single paragraph is him wanting Oliver in some shape or form.
Absolutely. Let's talk about cinematography, shall we? Because, I am going to butcher this name. Seyambo Mukdipor. Okay? I am so sorry that I just literally butchered your name. But they've collaborated in the past, and he read the novel in particular, and he spent time walking around the locations to get a feel for everything and to see how the color and the light changed during the day, and that would input his data. He felt lighting was an important factor, and it needed to be engaged with the characters. In order to capture the northern Italian summer, he created a completely artificial light due to the heavy rains that apparently lasted the entire shoot, which is ironic because...
Such a sunny shoot.
Yeah.
In the summer.
The movie is just beautiful.
It's bright. It's bright. It's gorgeous. It's, you know, it's Italy. You would not have thought that at all. I thought the look of this film was actually pretty. Especially when they went on their bike rides and they went to go swim in lakes and stuff. Like, just the natural location of where they are was pretty and gorgeous to look at, so I appreciated that they did go on location. Location usually always looks better, and just the color palette. It was warm and soft throughout the entire film. You would not think it has such a kind of depressing end. Just looking at the vivid brightness of this overall movie.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, I'd have to rewatch it, if there's any shift in tone as things go by. I mean, I guess granted, I can't even say it, because I was going to say, like, towards the end when he's leaving, you know, it's at night and there's a lot of night scenes, but to the same token, there's a lot of night scenes before that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think probably one of the more gray or saturated scenes is when they are both, when they go on their trip to Rome and they're by themselves, and it's near the moment where they have to actually part their ways. That's where it was more saturated, more sad. But it reflects the emotions of, like, knowing that you eventually have to part with a loved one.
Yeah. And, you know, I do applaud them, because at a lot of these various locations that they actually wanted to get, they only had like 30 minutes because of security reasons to get everything that they needed. So when you're shooting with one lens, I guess that is the advantage, is that you can shoot overall pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause 30 minutes, that if I was a producer on this movie, I'd be like, well, that's not even enough time to set up, right, let alone rehearse and anything. But they did it, so kudos to them.
Yeah, it's a good fast turnaround, and like their principal photography only lasted like 32, 34 days. So that's essentially a month. That's it.
Indeed. Well, it worked out well. As far as the initial cut, this movie clocks in over 2 hours, give or take.
2 hours, 12 minutes.
And the initial cut was well over 4 hours. So we did cut down a lot, but I can't imagine how much stuff they actually still shot or left uncut. Quite interesting to me. Again, I'm of the mindset, I think you could have cut out 30 minutes and made this far, far stronger movie.
Yeah, 30, 40 minutes if you really wanted to. Because this, and we talk about films where are really short but feel long, or films that are really long but feel short. This was a long movie that felt long.
Longer
than what it really should be. And I think that's just a testament of watching them literally live their days in and out of their days. It's just like, editing could have helped just with the pacing. Because it is such a simple story, that doesn't mean we have to keep watching every single move that they do.
And so also, too, like, if you're going to be in the spirit of anything, right, the book is what, just barely over 200 pages?
It's 248 pages.
That's a very fast read overall.
It is.
Right? And so keep that spirit. Be in and out.
Yeah.
So I think that, honestly, I really think this movie could have been that much better if you just cut down on some of the stuff.
Yeah, and that's also and I don't want to say problem, but that is the creative problem with this film, is that because the book is so internal dialogue heavy of certain scenes, certain moments, Elio's just going on for pages about literally 1 minute of his life, which pads the book, but that does not pad the film. So what pads the film is when we watch Elio and Oliver get on their bikes and ride away for 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that pads the film.
Absolutely. And you know, yeah, I applaud them for what they were able to capture, because it did look amazing. And especially if you kind of look at it, their budget was, I don't say slash, but initially they wanted about $12 million, and they got down to about $3.5 million, which nothing to sneeze at by any means. But no. They were able to do it a good job with it. And I think, here's the thing. People are loving it, so I don't want to knock that, but I just think, it just always hurts me when I see that it could have been better.
Yeah.
You know?
And if you think about it, the production, they're really in only a handful of places. The majority of the story in the book, it happens at that mansion that they're at. We saw so many scenes of them at the poolside. We saw so many scenes in the house, in their bedrooms and all that. So we saw the different locations there. Every once in a while, we went to the lake that they swam at, or the party outside, or to Rome, and they traveled, quote unquote. But, I mean, it's not a lot of production, just a few locations, and that is essentially your entire film.
Yeah, but to that point, you know, going back to the early development days, you had to find that right location. Mm-hmm. So the real job was ensuring that you had that amazing landscape, and they did. Also, kudos to them. So they premiered pretty much this time last year in January of 2017 at the Sundance Film Festival. Now, before that release, they already had U.S. distribution rights with a $6 million buyout from Sony Picture Classics. So kudos to them. And they just then, henceforth, they rode the festival circuit, the Berlin International Film Festival, Toronto, New York Film Fest. And by November 24th, it had a limited release in the U.S. and then it expanded, you know, on the 15th and further on the 22nd in the U.S. And so this movie, for all intents and purposes, has had a long shelf life. Most movies don't live in the public consciousness that long.
And admittedly, I didn't really hear about the story or film until like the end of last year. I didn't realize it's already been out for basically a year at Sundance already. Sundance just happened of this year, of 2018. So the fact that it's already been out for a year and people are now only really talking about it, they're definitely trying to make that Academy Oscar push, hence the end of 2017.
And but that's the fact that Armie Hammer is not nominated.
Right.
Insane.
But Timothée Chalamet is. It's definitely interesting too, but and I can understand they're pushing for it. It is a dramatic story. Academy loves tragic stories as well, and they also like book adaptations.
See, if Armie Hammer cried at the end, then he would be nominated.
I know.
See, that was the problem.
Probably, or had they shown Oliver's actual family life after the relationship, he could have been nominated.
Who knows?
Who knows?
But I do appreciate, you know, a movie like this takes on a far greater meaning. The teaser in itself was released to celebrate National Coming Out Day in October. And obviously, as things move towards a better, all-encompassing direction here, and in the U.S. at least, I can't speak for other countries, I'm sure this movie will sort of be touted well, and that I have no problem with that. I appreciate when a movie is able to help spread a certain message.
Yeah, I mean, the performances are great. I think what this film is lacking is the technical side of it. Cinematography is fine. Editing could use some work.
Yeah, that's the final thing. Yeah, just needed really that. It. And I do, you know, I do applaud them that single lens. I thought it was an interesting technique, but I do think it does work. It draws me into it, and I appreciate to see, like, obviously it has to work based on the production design aspect of it, but they have such a beautiful production aspect, and everywhere you look in that frame is something beautiful to look at.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's just sometimes I'm looking at it too long, and I apologize. I apologize. I know I'm being a little bit hard on the movie. All right. Pure numbers right now, worldwide total of about 22 million. So when you compare that to the budget, that's great.
Yeah, that is.
And also a per theater average of about 100,000, just over 100,000. That's amazing. That's the highest average since La La Land and the best per screen average since Brokeback Mountain for a gay movie, quote unquote. 96% on Rotten Tomatoes from 255 critics. It offers melancholy, powerfully affecting portrayal of first love, and empathetically acted by the two of them. So,
agreed. Yeah. I mean, agreed. I mean, the acting was fine. It's great that I mean they're both getting praise. Timothée Chalamet a little bit more than Armie Hammer, unfortunately, but. Yeah, I mean, they're both solid actors for the two of them. I think this film was more lacking on the technical side.
Yeah. All right. Well, that about does it for our breakdown of this movie, Call Me By Your Name. My name is Phil. as mentioned at the top of the show, you are welcome to comment, let us know your thoughts and opinions, and if you just do us that one big favor, spread the word about us. We get it. You don't see every movie. That's okay. We don't ask you to. But if you do, check back in with us or recommend us to other people who have seen particular movies. So that way they can perhaps enjoy us too.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, where can they interact with you and borrow your book?
Everyone can follow me at Serafini TV. And if you haven't read Call Me By Your Name, the book, do it. It's great.
And my name is Phil Svitek. Thank you guys as always. If you love books and movies, Marissa and I are actually doing a series called Adapted over on the
Book Circle Online.
Yeah, what the hell am I? We're on Popcorn Talk. But yes, we do a series for Book Circle Online called Adapted. This month, we're comparing Silence of the Lambs, the book, to the movie. Now, you wonder why we would do that. Well, because it's the anniversary of the movie coming out in February.
In February.
So, anyway, as far as Anatomy is concerned, we're finishing out our run of Oscar contenders. We're doing Phantom Thread, Three Billboards just next week. And, of course, then moving forward, we'll kind of complete the run, but we'll get into, like, the Black Panthers. We'll do Game Night and newer movies that are coming out. So,
fun ones.
And, of course, there's plenty of movies in our collective history that you guys can check out. You want to see another great Army Hammer movie, Free Fire. We talked about it.
Yeah.
Here on Anatomy.
There's also Nocturnal Animals. And we also just covered Lady Bird, who Timothée Chalamet was also in as well.
See? We come full circle.
We have.
All right. Thank you guys as always. We'll see you next time on another Anatomy of a Movie. Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.